Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Orange County Library System, offering enriching programs and resources for seniors at 15 locations throughout the county, with hands-on workshops, expert-led seminars, and more. A complete list of programs is available at ocls.org/senior/events.
The Florida legislative session is underway. What could become Florida law? You're listening to The Wrap from Central Florida Public Media. I'm Brendan Byrne. Republican legislative leaders opened the 2026 legislative session Tuesday, citing a need to make life more affordable for Floridians. But they offered a few clues about what will pass in the coming weeks and downplayed divisions between the House and Senate that emerged during the 2025 session. And Governor Ron DeSantis is floating the idea of a special session to address property taxes, along with an already scheduled special session on redistricting. We'll take a look at what the 60-day regular session holds and what might come beyond that, and we'll look at the legislation that impacts you. That's ahead on The Wrap, the big stories this week from Central Florida Public Media. But first, these news headlines. During the first week of the Florida legislative session, the state Senate is already passing bills. WUSF's Douglas Soule reports one of those bills overhauls the state's school voucher system.
Florida spends billions of dollars each year to help K-12 students pay for private school and homeschooling. An audit found issues within the surge of money. Bill sponsor Senator Don Gates listed them out before the vote.
On any given day of the week, the Department of Education can't find 30,000 students we're paying for. That's $270 million we're paying for students we can't locate.
The nearly 150-page bill includes stricter student tracking standards and more audits. It also requires the State Department of Education to come up with recommendations by December on how to better run the scholarship programs. The bill now goes to the House, where it faces an unknown fate. I'm Douglas Soule in Tallahassee.
Orange County will fight the Central Florida Expressway Authority's attempt to use eminent domain to acquire about 24 acres of conservation land near Split Oak Forest. Commissioners voted 4-3 Tuesday to challenge CFX, and as Central Florida Public Media's environment reporter Molly Durig explains, they did so against legal advice from the county attorney's office.
Senior Assistant County Attorney Deborah Babb Nutcher says she's been working on eminent domain cases in Florida since the 90s and has rarely ever seen one fail. Through eminent domain, governments and other entities can acquire property if they can demonstrate it's necessary to achieve a public purpose. Babb Nutcher says case law finds that public purpose can be a road, like the one CFX plans to build.
Yes, our land serves a very valid and important public purpose, and CFX will argue that their use of it will also establish a very important public purpose.
The future State Road 534 is already planned to cut through part of the protected Split Oak Forest on Osceola County's side. Back in 2019, CFX representatives told Orange County commissioners none of their county's land would be impacted. But last year, CFX said it needs some Orange County land near Split Oak, including part of another protected park. District 5 Commissioner Nicole Wilson said Tuesday the agency's move adds insult to injury.
What is abhorrent to all the people you've heard from today, and quite frankly 86% of the voting public in 2020, is the idea of our conservation land being the quickest, easiest, fastest, cheapest way for them to cut through to a new development.
An earlier motion Tuesday for the county to negotiate with CFX before any lawsuit is filed failed by a vote of 3-4. Molly Durig, Central Florida Public Media.
CFX is a financial sponsor of Central Florida Public Media, but it has no editorial role or say in its coverage. The Orange County School Board unanimously voted to sell the former Hungerford School property to Dr. Phillips Charities for over $1 million. Central Florida Public Media's education reporter Danielle Pryor says it was the site of the first school for black children in Central Florida.
The former Hungerford School now belongs to Dr. Phillips Charities. The charitable organization has plans to turn the site into an early learning center, affordable housing, and a museum, among other things. The sale comes after a failed land deal in 2023 and a lawsuit aimed at getting ownership for Eatonville that was thrown out in 2025.
That was Danielle Pryor reporting. NASA completed its first medical evacuation from the International Space Station. A capsule carrying a crew of four splashed down off the coast of San Diego, carrying the crew, including an astronaut, with what NASA described as a serious but stable medical condition. The agency did not disclose the name of the astronaut or details of the medical issue. The splashdown marks an early end to SpaceX and NASA's Crew 11 mission, which launched from the Kennedy Space Center in August. The crew's medical team determined the astronaut needed an additional examination that could only be done here on Earth. birth. These stories and more on our website. Visit cfpublic.org. One in six kids in Central Florida are at risk of going hungry, according to Second Harvest Food Bank of Central Florida. Partnerships between Second Harvest and schools are helping address that need. The program is already active in nearly 90 schools, with an additional 58 on the wait list. Hear more about the program and the families it serves. That story is on our website. Visit cfpublic.org. The 2026 legislative session is underway in Tallahassee. That 60-day session began Tuesday, and legislators are taking up a far-ranging set of bills. This week on Engage, WUSF state government reporter Douglas Soule and senior writer for the News Service of Florida, Dara Kam, spoke with Central Florida Public Media's Sharon Stone about the bills they are following and the impacts they may have on Floridians. Douglas Soule begins that conversation, which was taped on Wednesday.
Well, what's standing out so far for me is the relationship or the deterioration in relationship between the GOP leadership. There's a very significant moment where the governor, prior to his state-to-state address, shook Senate President Ben Albritton's hand, but not House Speaker Daniel Perez's. And that became the most, I would say, talked about moment in the Capitol yesterday. Perez addressed it. He referred to it as petulant. Senate President Ben Albritton also was asked about it repeatedly in a press conference Tuesday afternoon. And he tried to, I guess, create peace between the parties, even though the House Speaker had some criticisms for the Senate side as well. Perez expressed frustrations with the Senate, said that there was lost opportunity because they weren't on the same page about things. You'll recall that last session was extended because the parties couldn't figure out what they wanted to do with the budget. So I think beyond just policy, the politics involved and the relationships involved are going to dictate a lot of this session and impact the policies therein.
Dara, I can't help but notice you had a bit of a reaction when Douglas described it as relationship.
I did, because that was kind of my notes. That's what I was going to lead with also. I think it's maybe contextualize it a little bit for your listeners. Why does this matter? You know, okay, we all know that politicians don't get along, and it's significant here in Florida because Republicans control everything. Governor DeSantis had major buy-in from the legislature during his first 6 years in office, and he is now entering his last legislative session, not counting if we have any special sessions. The fact that the House Speaker is calling the governor of his same party petulant, and that the governor is not shaking the House Speaker's hand before his traditional annual State of the State speech, it's not just reporter catnip. It is significant because it will affect their ability to get things done.
And we're hearing the governor may call a special session on property taxes. Douglas, I know you've done a lot of reporting on this. Can you help us understand what ideas are actually on the table?
Well, the House itself has created its own committee focused on the property tax specifically, and they're already pushing several measures forward aimed at reducing the amount Floridians would pay. Now, Governor DeSantis has been loudly calling for reductions for nearly a year now. He argues that when they decide to make a proposal and put it on the ballot, there should only be one proposal. So he's kind of against this House approach of pushing forward multiple things. For listeners, the important thing to point out here is no matter what the legislature passes, it's them, the voters, who have to decide whether it becomes the law of the land. And they need to do so by a 60% approval threshold on the 2026 November ballot. Even a couple of weeks ago, I thought property tax was going to be one of the bigger parts of this legislative session. But you had the governor last week saying that maybe it's going to be in a special session following the regular session. And the Senate leadership, the House leadership now is not stating definitively whether it's going to be solved by the end of the 60-day regular session.
There's been a lot of discussion about affordability, right? So both the leaders are talking about affordability as the most pressing issue facing Floridians. And they're kind of hanging their hats on this property tax thing as being the key affordability issue. But what they're focusing on is property taxes for homeowners. So the governor frequently will float ideas and says, Floridians, they should reap the benefits of these tax breaks that we're doing. Let the tourists pay. Let the Airbnbers pay.
And we don't have any set proposal from the Senate side. We don't have any set proposal for the governor, despite the fact that he's been one of the louder ones calling for this. On the House side, it's important to note, too, that the proposals are focused on Floridians with primary residences in Florida, but it wouldn't mean an utter elimination of what they pay. It's focused on non-school property taxes. They're being concerned about educational funding if they were to do a complete cut. Obviously, the final product is hugely unknown, but it'll definitely be, I would imagine, a part of the tug and pull between the negotiations between the chambers.
One of the sticking points on the property tax issue is that rural counties, the rural communities, and how their tax rolls are very dependent on homesteaded property taxes for revenue. So how do you kind of ensure that they don't lose all the funds that they need for schools and law enforcement and infrastructure by making significant changes to how property taxes are handled?
Some of the transportation bills jumped out at me. There's a bill to get rid of those registration decals on license plates and keep records electronic instead. And there's the hands-free driving bill that would make it illegal to hold your phone at all or even have it in your lap. Could we see changes to what drivers experience on the roads?
Handheld devices is one that has been around for a while, and I think that that could have legs. I'll tell you what. And I'm just a cynic, maybe, or I've been doing this for a very long time. I don't see that passing in an election year because it's kind of controversial. It's what we call up here a talker bill. I mean, for sure, it's a talker. The other one that I think has gotten a lot of traction, and I'm not really sure where this is coming from or why this is such a problem that needs to be fixed. It's the stickers that you put on your license, your car tag. The governor has come out in favor of this. The Miami-Dade County tax collector has issued maybe 5 press releases talking about what a great idea this is and how it's critical to save money and to benefit Florida drivers. The other thing that we are talking about here that could affect drivers is a bill that would require a state-issued identification card to say whether you're a citizen or not. So there would be, according to the bill that's filed in the House, it would say NC, as in non-citizen, on the back of your state-issued identification card, which is your driver's license, meaning that you're not a citizen. And I guess the reason for that is to make sure that anyone who's a non-citizen can't vote, which is already the case in Florida.
And just to wrap up, anything else on your radar that Central Floridians should keep an eye on this session? Start with you, Dara.
I thought that the education stuff is really interesting because that might have an impact on the way that a lot of people are using those vouchers, and I think the way that you're going to be getting them and the way that you're going to the accountability part of it, there's going to be deadlines, I believe. The Senate package has deadlines for when you can apply for the vouchers and when you can apply to renew them. I think also something for Central Floridians to watch, the My Safe Florida Home program that was very, very popular. I think you'll see the legislature throw more money at that program because people have been really scooping up those funds to try to help harden their homes against storms.
And Douglas, will you wrap us up?
What the legislature ultimately does with redistricting, with redrawing U.S. congressional map for Florida, will have nationwide implications. Governor Ron DeSantis has already called a special session in late April to redistrict, though there's some thought that maybe that could be done during the regular session. We don't know for sure. But regardless, whether it's done now and in the next 60 days or in late April, that's going to be a huge deal with huge legal implications. It's something we're going to be covering, not just when it happens, but for many, many months after, over the course of the political implications. Florida's congressional map already definitely disproportionately favors Republicans. We have 20 U.S. House reps who are Republicans and only 8 Democrats. Democrats are quite up in arms about this idea of changing the map and potentially giving even more seats to Republicans.
But I think all the stakes, the high stake nature of that redistricting could have an impact on deals that are being brokered during the regular legislative session. And something that I've learned in my almost 30 years of covering the legislature here in Tallahassee is that oftentimes the deals are not about directly what you're seeing going on. The horse trading isn't about the actual bill that's in front of you. It's about the many other issues that are completely unrelated to whatever that bill is about.
That was Central Florida Public Media's Sharon Stone speaking with WUSF state government reporter Douglas Soule and senior writer for the News Service of Florida, Dara Kam. Hear more about the potential impacts of the legislative session on the Engage podcast. Get it wherever you get this podcast. That's going to do it for the wrap this week. This podcast is produced by Central Florida Public Media with editorial assistance from News Director LaToya Dennis. I'm Brendan Byrne. This is The Wrap.